Hi, everybody, and welcome back to What's Next, a West Wing podcast. So good to have you.
Oh my God.
How do you like that? That's how you sound.
That's not how I sound. Oh my God.
If I kept a straight face, it would have been exactly how you sound.
Okay.
Yeah. We're back with episode 13. Is it 13? Taking out the trash day?
I think.
This is Anthony Caputo here with my good friend, Joseph. How do you say your last name?
Amiato.
Oh, he's Japanese now.
No, that's how I pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm
taking back over. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to What's Next, the West Wing podcast. This is episode number 13. Is it 13? Yeah, I think it is. Take out the trash day.
What is there, an echo in here?
Anthony Caputo, I'm sorry. I got nothing. How do you feel about this episode, Ant?
It was great.
Was it?
Yeah. No, well, yeah. I liked it. You didn't like it.
I don't like this episode.
I liked it. I thought it was pivotal in the plot of the season.
Okay.
But
you don't know where the season's going.
But I feel like we're at an inflection point right now. I feel like they needed to shift. They needed to pivot somewhere. And I feel like this closed a lot of open ends.
Well, it definitely closed one with a whimper, not with a bang. And we'll get to that.
Was that in the sex ed report?
That was not. I'm surprised you've never heard that phrase. Ends with a bang, not a whimper. But in this case, it ended with a whimper, not a bang. You never heard that before?
Mm-mm.
Ah, ironic. Mm-hmm. Or I guess not ironic. You really don't know a lot of things. So, all right. Yeah, I don't really love... I just feel like a lot of this episode, a lot of it just doesn't flow as well. I didn't look it up, but I wouldn't be surprised to see like 4 people credited with this episode. Or if there was like... I don't know if there's commentary on the DVD. I imagine there's like a lot of shit just... Shit just don't make sense. Shit just don't make sense. Hashtag shit just don't make sense.
Like what?
Well, okay. The first one is the whole thing. The whole Lydell storyline doesn't make any sense. Now, I like aspects of it. Mm. One in particular I love. But let's just start with the stuff that doesn't make any sense, Ant. By episode's end, they send the Lydells home because of what they say in the meeting with Mandy about how they assume at first it's, you know, a circumstance in which the father is embarrassed that his son is gay, right, and they want to get this, you know, legislation through for hate crime. And then it turns out that, no, he doesn't have a problem with it. It's the fact that that the government is, you know, embarrassed, and he's 100% right. So can't have him around because he's going to ruin, you know, any chance we have of, or ruin the moment, maybe not ruin any chance of us getting the legislation across, but she being CJ, tells Danny, if you call the Lydells and ask them why they aren't, and then he cuts her off. He knows, Danny Kincannon knows, that they were supposed to be at this event.
Right.
Now she's telling him that for some reason they're not going to be there. And prior to this, in 2 other scenes, she's given to him all the reasons why she thought that they would not be coming.
Right.
Because she asks him, you know, is it possible for a guy to be embarrassed that his son is gay even after he's been killed, even after blah, 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 blah. What the hell are they talking about when they get to that point at the end? When he's like, if there's a story there, I'll find it. And she's like, no, you won't. We've gotten very good at this. And he's like, yeah, you have. How does that make any sense to anybody? If I were that reporter, I'd be like, oh, there's a story there. Like, I would find that in like 5 minutes. 5 fucking minutes. Find it. You gave it to me. How does that make any sense? I want you to make sense of that. Go.
I really think that...
That it makes no sense. I agree.
No. No, I think that what maybe, I don't know, Sorkin was trying to do with this is why they didn't come in. I think that's the story.
I don't disagree with you. So, you're right, because, yes, continue.
So I when she says, you know, when he was, I feel like he cut her off when he she was going to tell him why they weren't going to come.
Right, but I guess my point is that all you have to do is show up at their house and be like, so, I have it on anonymous sources that you're not coming because you're embarrassed of your gay son. And then the father would be like, that is a line of fucking shit. You know who's embarrassed about my gay son? This government. See what I'm saying? Like, it just doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, if the father is going to do that in the White House, he's going to do that to a reporter who has information that he's embarrassed about his son.
Yeah, but is Danny Kincannon going to fly to Minneapolis?
I would... see, I don't know. Apparently, he's not. That's what the episode is making me think is going to happen, that he's not going to do that.
But I think that
if you wanted a story... I guess what I'm saying is that if there's a story to find, he's not going to be able to find it, is a bullshit thing, because he's been fed this story the entire episode. That's what I'm saying. Whether or not he goes and wants to find it is immaterial. He can find it if he wants to, and CJ's making it like there's no way that you're going to find out about this. Well, maybe, she's given him all the information.
Maybe CJ knows that he's not going to go and do it.
Maybe, but that's not what she says. She says, you're not... He says, if there's a story, I will find it. And then she says, no, you won't. It's not about whether or not I think you're going to go. It just doesn't make sense. You're doing an awful lot of work right now trying to make this make sense, and it just doesn't.
Hmm.
Bad writing. Ooh, yeah, your eyebrows raised. That's right. I said bad writing.
It's the second time in the podcast you said that.
There's going to be three, because there's another part that I don't like. Should we go right into the I don't like, or should we mix it up with something fun?
Let's go into what you don't like.
All right. The other thing that I don't like is the fact that they made this... Well, I think I talked about this last episode or two episodes ago. They made this whole thing about the drug addiction or Valium and the alcoholism, and they whisk it away with absolutely nothing. Let's break it down. You ready to break it down? I'm ready to break it down. Here we go.
You gonna do a dance?
I don't know. I feel like I should.
Waving your arms.
This is gonna be the Leo breakdown shuffle. So, okay. First of all, you have... I don't even know why I'm starting with Simon Blair.
You gotta be drunk and popping pills
I think we should do... You've always wanted to do this, and I think very soon... This actually should have been the episode that we did drunk. Because I don't like it so much. This actually would have been good. I tell you what, I'll make you a promise. The next episode that I don't like, that I'm going to like lose my mind over, because if it's a good thing, I don't want to be drunk for it. But if it's an episode that I don't like, we will save that for a drunk episode. That'll be a good idea.
I just wanted to have a couple of drinks over an episode. You want to get drunk and do an episode?
Yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun.
Think that's the only reason. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so... we're going to start with Simon Bly. I don't know why I'm starting with Simon Bly, but I'm going to. First of all, you haven't seen Gilmore Girls, right?
No.
All right. We have two Gilmore Girls actors, characters. We've got Liza Wheel, who plays the chick at the end, and I can't remember her name, but she's Paris Geller to me. She's the girl that ratted out Leo. And then Simon Bly is the head of Chilton, which is the school that she goes to. You should watch Gilmore Girls. Anyway, Simon Bly. He is telling Leo, he's making this series, he's doing what I am annoyed at, kind of, not personified, but in the foreground. So he's basically saying to Leo, this is such a big problem. You're creating such a big problem for the president. It's going to railroad his agenda. It's going to be bad for the party. Josh and Sam aren't going to have any... chance at avoiding hearings. And all it took was to get this sex ed report shelved for like a year. That's all it took. That's really small. That's really minimal. I mean, he says it, you know, I'm throwing you a rope, and I actually agree with it. And I also think it just doesn't fit that Sam and Josh don't jump at the chance. Yes, I'm going to be probably... You know, Kelly or Steve Rogers or someone out there is going to say to me, well, the reason why that happened is because they're young and they're full of hubris and all this other stuff. And that's all well and good. But the president just told you, whatever it takes, don't take anything off the table. This to me is a slam dunk. You want the sex ed? You're not even telling me to kill the sex ed report. You're telling me to hold it off for a year? First of all, that scene doesn't make any sense because Josh and Sam should just jump at that fucking right away. A. B. If they're so willing to make a deal, why don't they want something bigger if this is so important, right? Or if it's not that important, why have I been told it's this important this entire time? Why is Leo's issue so important that they're just willing to give it a pass, the Republicans?
Now, what's entailed with a hearing?
Oh, a hearing. What do you remember what happened with the president and Monica Lewinsky and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or,
yeah,
you know, all the Benghazi hearings for Hillary Clinton that go on and on and on. Yeah. I mean, if this is like a big... Can you imagine if Hillary Clinton went to like the Republicans and the Republicans were like, listen, we'll avoid a Benghazi hearing so long as you put a sex ed report in a drawer for like a year? Or President Clinton with Monica Lewinsky. It just doesn't seem to make sense. And right. Then to just get rid of this storyline, which has been building for five episodes now or something like that.
Yeah.
It just, it's ends with a whimper, not a bang. I don't know. I think you are right when you said in the beginning of this episode, you said they're just getting stuff out of the way. I feel like they're just clearing the field for bigger stories that are to come. Because that to me was awful. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
I mean, I was upset that it ended
Joe,
that
you're
way
right.
Too.
And you're handsome. Thanks, Ann. I appreciate
that's
that.
That's Joe's inner voice.
Oh, is that what that was? Bullshit. I'm calling bullshit.
I don't know. That wasn't sexy enough for me to really catch my attention.
Wait, what does that mean? What wasn't sexy?
I don't know. I liked other parts of the episode, so I kind of
which is
zoned,
fine,
zoned
but
out.
But let me just ask you a question here. A few episodes ago, or when it was first brought up, because it was like a big thing when it was brought up. Didn't you think that this was going to be a major thing?
I did.
You did, right? And it just kind of disappeared. It just, it's awful. Come on.
Well, I mean, maybe the ending was, maybe that's what you're upset about, but they spent five episodes on it. So it was a big thing.
And to be honest, it never felt like it ever got to the place where it impacted anyone. I'm not sure this was negatively... By the end of the episode, Leo says to Karen, I think her name is Karen Larson. It's Paris Geller, I'm going to call her. By the end of the episode, they get to Paris Geller, and he says, you caused a lot of problems for me and a lot of people maybe we don't even know. Did you really cause that many problems? Josh went to a deposition and almost got himself in trouble. That's really it, as far as I can tell. Right?
Well,
name one other thing that happened that was a problem.
Not explicitly, but implicitly. I mean, we could...
Yeah, but I got to see it. In order for me to feel it, I can't like just, you know...
See, I guess that... I mean, I'm not like that. I can think about all the things that were probably going on in the White House after this happened.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me for drama.
The other thing is, I don't think that it ended... I think the bang that it ended, that it went out on, was when Leo got in front of the press and confessed.
Right, and we didn't even really see that.
Right, but I think that's where it came to a head.
I like that you used that as your bang, and I was like, yeah, but even that bang was a whimper. And you're like, well, yeah, it was, but...
It was better than this, and I think that's...
Okay, let me just ask you a question. Do you feel like this could have been done better?
Maybe. I can't think of how I would have done it.
I don't know.
Can you?
Well, I'd have to think about it, but I think it could have been done better. I absolutely think it can be done better. I haven't really thought about how yet. I think the problem that Sorkin had in this is that he chose an issue which is completely believable and somewhat harmless. And when I say harmless, I don't mean that drug addiction or alcoholism is harmless, but that it's a scandal in which you don't necessarily question the morality of the character. If it was a scandal in which Leo had killed a guy 20 years ago, you would question the morality of that character. Because this scandal, or if he had cheated on his wife or had a sex thing or something like that, where it could compromise the moral compass of the character and how you view him.
I think this does, though.
Really? Alcoholism?
Yeah, for some people.
I don't think
people,
it does to that degree.
Well, it's not murder or rape.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's a little bit... Well, I think that's my point, is that he chose something that is both believable and something that doesn't tarnish your view of Leo so poorly that you look at him completely different now. But in choosing this thing, it almost became a little too soap opera-y. Like, if you saw this through, it would probably be a little soap opera-y. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the issue. And once he realized that, I think he was like, all right, fuck it. I got to move on from this. And I think he just kind of got rid of it as quickly and as quietly as he possibly could. And to me, that kind of sucks.
One of my biggest pet peeves, or like what makes a movie a bad movie for me, is the bad ending. And I guess that's why I like TV shows.
You subscribe to the, what's his name? Steven Spielberg school of endings. He didn't like the original ending of Jaws, so he changed it because it was supposed to end like... do you know this about Jaws?
No.
Jaws was originally supposed to end where like Jaws drowns, the same way that like in like Moby Dick kind of. Quint is supposed to be like stabbing the shark and kind of like gets blood in his gill lungs or whatever. Huh. And they like kind of drag down together. Spielberg was like, no, that's really boring and not a good ending for a movie, so I'm gonna have the shark explode. And they're like, how the fuck are you gonna do that? And it's like, well, I'll put this thing in his mouth and then we'll shoot it. And it's like, nobody's gonna believe that. And then Spielberg famously said, if I have them for the first 155 minutes, I'll have them for the last 5 minutes. And he was right. Everyone accepted it and everybody liked the ending.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel. Like, I think the one of even if the movie was great, if they had a bad ending, I'm so pissed off.
Can you name an example of one?
Spider-Man 3.
Wait, hold on. You're saying that the movie was great until the ending?
No, it was entertaining.
Okay, because that movie is not
great. Or even 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, we're not doing this now. We're not doing this
now. The ending of that movie was horrible.
The ending of that movie is fantastic.
It's horrible.
It is so good.
And then another one is the sitcom, How I Met Your Mother. The way that okay. whole series
yeah,
ended,
I
wanted to like...
Yeah, I know that a lot of people did not like that, yeah.
It ruined it all for
Quantum
me.
Leap.
Cricket.
It's a good show. Sam never got home. Cricket. Always broke my heart.
E.T. I hate E.T.
When I don't E.T. like get E.T. I don't like the movie at all. So.
You know what I think of when I think of E.T.? When he gets sick at the end, when he turns all white, what? I think of cauliflower. Don't ask me why, and I can't eat cauliflower to this day.
I'm putting cauliflower on the sweet potato pizza that I'm making on Monday.
Well, I'm going to skip that one and go to the
pesto.
But
didn't you have it the last time?
No.
I'll make part of it without the cauliflower.
You don't have to do that.
Just, it'll be fine. It's going to have hazelnuts and truffles. All right,
I think of E.T. sick when I look at cauliflower.
All right, fine.
Because he should be like broccoli, green and healthy.
But he's never green.
He was green.
No,
E.T.'s
brown.
Green. E.T.'s green.
E.T.'s not... I'm Googling this right now.
Maybe I pictured him... Maybe he's... Whatever. He's broccoli. And you know what? Cauliflower is sick broccoli.
What the fuck? Cauliflower? All right. You are psycho. Okay. So we're moving on as I Google this image. So those are the things that really bothered me.
All okay? right. Cool.
You good with that?
I'm good.
All right. Because, all right. Sex ed, by the way.
Let's talk about sex ed.
Oh, you want to talk about sex ed? What do you want to say about sex ed?
Did you ever have a sex ed class?
I did. Did you?
I did. In high school.
Okay.
I'll never forget it.
Okay.
Mr. Chorney.
Mine was Mr. Alfano. Wait. And I think Mr. Dewan.
You had two sex ed classes?
Yeah, well, these guys, they were also...
gym teachers.
Yeah. So they were already like just like the laziest sex on the planet.
Right.
No offense to gym teachers, but these guys were just the laziest sex.
I wonder if
so
Mr. Chawney's
so
listening to this.
Tell me about
this.
Your... Mr. Chawney is not. Fucking Chawney. Well, go ahead.
And I remember, I'm stuttering here. Holy moly.
I know. It's because you got so excited.
Without, like, fail, every class, he would mention his love for Hennessy. I don't know why.
I think he's got issues. I mean,
I really think
this
he
guy,
did.
Wow, Hennessy.
Yeah, and it was just a very awkward
E.T.'s brown, buddy.
E.T.'s green.
What color is that?
That's green.
That's not green.
It's pale green.
That is brown brown.
I can't see. It's too far away.
It's in front of your face.
I can't see.
No, you're not seeing because you're looking away. He's brown.
He has a green hue.
He doesn't have a green... So sex ed, what'd you learn in sex ed?
Apparently not much.
Because you can't please a woman?
I don't know.
Is that what it is?
Can you get an accurate representation if you're pleasing someone well enough or not?
Wait, what? Can I get an accurate representation? What does that mean?
Like, it's up for interpretation. You want me to...
Oh, do I know if I am?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, are you... Well, it's easier for women to figure it out with men. Well, to be honest, though, you know, if you're honest with your sexual partners, you should know where there are deficiencies and where there are proficiencies, I will say. And I think with every sexual partner I've had, there have been things to, like, work on and get better because everyone is different, especially with women, because women, it's so much more difficult than with men.
You've had sex with men?
No, I'm a dude.
Yeah, I know.
I'm saying it's easy for me. It's easy for all guys to, you know, climax.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I maybe. I think that I wouldn't have said this until my last relationship, but I do believe now in sexual compatibility.
Oh, that is 100% true. That is so true.
I know good sex.
Do you mean physically or... Because I would say it's an all-encompassing thing. Some girls actually... I would say one girl. Now she knows who she is if she's listening to this because we've had this discussion. But there was one girl. We just physically were not... It just didn't jive.
Right. I mean, I know good sex. I know bad sex. I guess the good sex is when you're able to talk about it too. One, some partners don't even like to talk about it.
That's just a good, I think that's a good relationship in general.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I think the compatibility factor is huge.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
To determine if it's good or not.
What, but did you learn anything? Seriously. Did you learn anything in sex ed?
No.
I think I learned about nocturnal emissions. My sperm was described as being in like a hotel and all the rooms were full.
What?
Yeah. That's the only thing I really remember. I remember Mr. Alfano explaining that when you ejaculate, there is no chance it will ever be urine and vice versa. I was like, all right. I remember being taught those two things and that's it. And then, of course, they played you the video where the girl gives birth or the woman gives birth. Uh-huh. And I just could not watch that. So, other than that, I don't think I learned anything else.
I learned from Mr. Chawney that if you drink enough Hennessy, you'll get someone pregnant.
Is that right?
So don't do that.
Wait, is that? Did he say that? Yes. Wow. Now, did he limit it to only Hennessy or did he move on from that?
No, it was always Hennessy. Always.
So, but like if you drank too much cognac, you'll be fine.
I don't know. I mean, I never tried it.
All right. Well, maybe we should get Chawney on the line. Do you have his phone number?
No.
Hey, Chawney, baby.
I got 100 in the class, though. I remember that.
You did. What causes pregnancy? Hennessy. What do you need to use in order to not become pregnant? A cap.
That's
please explain further on a Hennessy bottle. You know what's actually interesting in this episode, though, too? I think about this every now and again, and I think this is the only show that can really do this. So they make the deal. That was another fucking scene. I'm going to say this very quickly, and I don't want to dwell on it too long because I want to get to my point. But why the fuck didn't the president just say to CJ in the beginning of that scene, like, listen, CJ, we can't do the report because I had to get Leo off the hook? He, like, drags it out for the sake of drama for, like, 2 minutes.
I think it's because he's a little ashamed of it. No, I think he was
He's not ashamed of it. He knew from... Actually, that's a legitimate point. Fuck.
You know, like... I don't know. I like to believe in the characters. We're coming at it from different perspectives.
You know what, though? That's actually a legitimate point. He might be... Especially by what she says at the end. That's actually maybe legitimate. He might be embarrassed that... I don't even... Yeah, you might be right. because that's a really because I was about to say, and this is the point that I was going to make, and I don't think any other show I really, I mean, I can't think about this on The Office or Friends or I name another show where someone makes a decision for whatever reason, sometimes not the best of reasons, as is in this case, that will affect millions of lives and in a negative consequence. So, you know, you have statistics, right? This report is telling you that if you teach properly students, not abstinence, abstinence plus, that the chances of people getting pregnant will be cut down by some number. I don't know what it is, but it's going to help in that regard. By sitting on that report, X number of girls just got pregnant. There is no other show where decisions that are made by people, individuals, human beings, affects that number of people on anything that I've ever seen. And that always sticks with me. The amount of power that they have and their decisions that they make.
In the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, if they decided to put that report out, that changes certain people's lives.
Hmm.
If they don't put that report out, you go back to the episode, the big government is over and all this other stuff. You know, these decisions that they make, I sometimes forget just how big their reach is. You know, when we talk about other dramas, it's usually their own lives that they're affecting and only their own lives. Not so with these people. I sometimes forget that. And then a moment like that, I'm like, wow, that's how far their decisions reach. Maybe not there, maybe the president, but they're a part of it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's just a moment that really struck me.
I was thinking of a quote, but I can't think of it now.
God damn it.
When I think about it, I'll let you know.
Oh, please. Yeah, do. That was sarcasm.
I still will.
You know what also affected me too? Really, it just really kind of hit me in the face. Do you remember the scene where all the secretaries are talking?
All the women secretaries?
All the women. How about that? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was really uncomfortable to watch that scene. I'm curious to whether or not... Now...
Then Miss Landingham comes in too.
Well, she's just the classy broad, right? But I wonder if it was awkward to shoot that day. I would have been very uncomfortable as the director. I would have had to say, I realize that women, even in the past 17 years, have come a long way in terms of equal rights. And I think a scene like that would get torn to shreds, and rightfully so, today. But you can't tell me that this is new, right? So obviously this isn't a new thing. You don't think that it was like awkward?
I don't think so.
Really?
I think that the perceptions of what it was back then wasn't as strong as it is now. So it was still accepted for what it was.
I think you're right. I think the perceptions of the general public, but I think those actors on set were like, "Oh, looks like it's Women's Day or whatever." I feel like they were being sarcastic about it. I'm saying in that regard. I feel like they would have just been, I think it would have been very awkward.
Now, you see, it would be great if we can get one of them on the show to interview.
I actually would ask Janelle Maloney that. If we can get Janelle Maloney, that would be awesome. Because
if we can get anyone on from that little staff.
I trust Janelle Maloney. And Janelle Maloney and I shared a moment in reality.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I talked to you about that before.
You did.
Yeah. We were at a bank and she thought I was someone else and it was kind of awesome. it was really good. I loved it. All right, well, I'm glad that you noticed it, because it was just like, when I saw that, I was like, yikes. And you know what, I've seen that episode before, years ago. You might be right, because I like to think of myself as maybe not liberal in terms of like the political climate, but I like to think of myself as forward thinking. And up until, I haven't watched the show in a while, but up until just watching it, I don't think I even
picked it up, right?
Yeah. I don't know. What do you got? I have so many more things.
Go.
All right, you go. I wanna make sure you get your shit in.
I talked about sex ed.
I know, you love sex ed.
Let's have some Hennessy.
I don't even have Hennessy. I do have whiskey though.
I'm gonna buy you something, you know what it's gonna mean.
What? What?
Nothing.
Okay.
I'll bring the candles too.
Oh, all right. I think one of my favorite... All right, so I think one of my favorite parts of this episode has to do with the turn. Now we're getting back to the CJ Danny thing and how there were the part of it that I didn't like, I enumerated to you. How did you feel about that turn where you're building up to this thing where you're going to hear the father be embarrassed about, you know, the gay side? I mean, they built it up. You know, Leo said, you know, he sells dental supplies in the Twin Cities. Right, how enlightened can this guy be? I often like when I like when Sorkin does. When Sorkin kind of builds this idea, because, you know, it's an episode that's entitled Take Out the Trash. And you're watching, I mean, Donna fucking hits Josh right on the head with it. You know, how they're taking all these stories that they don't want people to hear about and trying to hide them. You know, I mean, that's reasonable. Like, I get that in politics. I understand why you'd want to do that, but that's also kind of dickish, right? Like, there's something in these stories that's worthy of talking about, of listening
right,
to.
Right, but that's the way, that's the media's way to censor the things that they only want us to hear.
Not the media, the government.
The government.
Yes. Yeah. So exactly.
But then that's inevitably turned to the media too, because they're the ones that write the stories, and then that trickles down even further. So it's like it really does stem from the White House.
Right. It starts with them, but I guess my point is that we are primed to think of them better. You know, we're primed to think of them with higher aspirations. Not the, again, this is the ideal world. You know, they still have to, you know, live in reality and all this other stuff. I guess my point is that you set up an episode in which they are doing this, and then you start to get to the idea that, oh, well, this guy, this father, is embarrassed about his son. And then in that great scene, and I think it's the mural room, he lets CJ have it and totally knocks her on her ass.
Right.
When you kind of realize, yeah, it's not him, it's his government that is embarrassed. And it's a nice turn to kind of, it's almost like Mr. Willis of Ohio. You have to have a little bit more faith in the citizens than, you know, just the government. Because the government's not really doing a lot of great stuff in this episode. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I agree with that.
Which part?
In full, that the government's not doing a good job.
It's not that they're doing a bet, but they're not the heroes of this episode. Okay. Sam, CJ, Sam, CJ, Josh, Toby, they're not really the heroes of this episode. You know what I mean? They're all partaking in a thing that's designed to, and again, I don't think it's like really malicious. I don't think it's like the most evil thing on the planet, but they're not the heroes.
Right.
And then they build up this guy, this father, to be a villain. I mean, they build him up to be a villain. He's embarrassed about his gay son who was killed.
Right.
You know, Leo, fathers and sons. And I don't know if people understand that is, I mean, fathers and sons is really, you know, I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know if people understand like the, just, it's almost like taken for granted that a father is going to be embarrassed by a gay son. Right. And he just fucking totally blows that out of the water.
See, but when I watch that whole thing, I think that what it's really telling us is that as a nation, we need to take a better look at how we got here.
That's you know, fair. That's reasonable.
Because I don't think it's the White House per se. I think it's us as a nation.
Well, you're also talking about, I think this is one of those things where you have to keep it in the context of the time, and this is the 90s.
Right.
And in the 90s, you had people like Clinton and then Bush in 2000. Even Barack Obama didn't come out for same-sex marriage until, like, I think 2 years into his presidency. And you know he didn't change his mind. You know that he was always in favor of it, but he couldn't be honest about it. So, I mean, I think that's a fair point when you say, you know, we have to, you know, look into ourselves in that regard, because it's not just about the things that other people are doing, but also what we're doing.
Right. It's the same thing as if Donald Trump gets elected. I think that we all need to take a better look at where we've come as a nation.
Individually, and yeah. I just think
and
that
collectively.
It was Yeah, and but I just think it's interesting that they posed, that they juxtaposed what's going on in this episode for all the staffers and the fact that this guy inspires CJ to say the line, "We could all be better teachers." This guy inspires her to say that. It inspires her to almost go to the point of giving Danny a story, which I will contend she already did. And then that sentiment is what is occurring in the very last scene with Leo and whatever her name is. I'm calling her Paris Keller. I mean, that's that scene is worth the price of admission for me. I will sit through all the other crap because that scene is
that
so
was a good
fucking
scene.
Good.
I love
and,
that scene.
And he's kind of, and the father is the one that kind of, you know, breaks through all the bullshit of this. I mean, even look at something like that PBS thing. You know, who doesn't like PBS? It's amazing to me that the producers make $20 million on Fozzie Bear and taxpayers have to foot the bill for that show or that that network. That's fucking bullshit. And Toby just is flippant and is like, I don't care. And I understand why he says that, but come on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, there's the our heroes aren't really heroes in this episode, except for Leo. Leo is just, Leo does exactly what we're, what you and I talk about every week. Inclusion, not exclusion.
Right.
I think the line that is the, what is it? You're not like what I thought you'd be like, is what Karen Larson says. I think that is probably going to be said, that could be said by everyone when they only look at the situation from the outside and don't get to know the people. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You have to be let in, though.
Yes, you do.
You know, and
yes,
I
you
think
do.
I think that you have to be let in by the person who is in control.
Yes, but you both have to go in with an open mind to some
right.
degree.
Now, Leo did give her the option to go. If you remember, he said, if it's all right with you and you want to speak, why don't you put
right.
down your things?
Yes.
If not, you can leave.
Yes.
And she did put down her things.
Yes.
So it was mutually agreed that they're going to talk.
Yes.
But if Leo didn't give her that opportunity to, then none
and
of that would
And he even gives
happened.
Her the opportunity to stay with the
right.
job. He's like, if you want, let's give each other a second chance.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's one of those, it's the only time in this episode where you feel like you're actually being taught something. You know, CJ tells the president we could all be better teachers. And Leo is being that guy. I mean, you know, there's a couple of points in the in that scene that I just want to highlight, you know, specifically. One of the things that I think is really fascinating is I think they did it for dramatic effect. I think at this point, everybody knows what an alcohol is, how an alcoholic is and what alcoholism is. So her, especially since her father was an alcoholic, I'm a little amazed that her character didn't know what an alcoholic was. But I'm not going to get hung up on that. I think it was amazing to watch their conversation because let's think about what each person doesn't know. She doesn't know what type of person he is in
right.
reality. All she knows is that he's an alcoholic. He doesn't know what her motives were. Now, prior to this episode, I can ask you, it would probably be, or prior to this scene when you found out that there was someone that leaked the information, did you have any negative feelings toward this person? Because I can't remember back to when I first watched this, but I would have assumed it was someone got the information with malice, with malicious intent. With like, they want to destroy Leo or,
absolutely.
Right? So that's what Leo has to be assuming. And what does Leo learn? No.
It was this girl.
It's this girl whose dad was an alcoholic who probably did awful things. She couldn't even bring herself to say what those things were. And she was so afraid that someone with that kind of power could maybe do those kinds of things.
To the, yeah.
And it's, I think my favorite moment is when Leo says, you know, what you did caused some problems, but I'm not entirely sure it wasn't a little bit brave. He's right. I mean, if you're her and you're thinking, oh my God, this man is capable of all of this awful, I have to do something. He's right. I mean, in by saying that she's a little bit brave.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
And the fact that he can admit it and see her point of view is all we ever talk about.
Right.
He takes himself out of the equation, doesn't think about the shit that he had to go through because of it, that his friends had to go through. He's able to see her point of view and where she's coming from, and he gives her a pass on it. That is just, I mean, I aspire to that type of wisdom. I really do. That is wisdom. That to me is wisdom.
So now I know that, this whole scene, the whole episode's scripted, right?
Right, yes.
So somebody had to think about the elements to make
not someone. Yeah. Mr. Sorkin.
Mr. Sorkin, who has a class now on screenwriting.
He does.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
But anyway, so he had to craft this episode and the elements that led up to this outcome.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now, how would that look in real life? And I think, off air, when I came in today, you kind of facilitated a pseudo Leo thing with me.
I don't know what that means.
Because I'm trying to think about when you do have the power, when you're in control of the situation, how do you open it up to enable the engagement between the two parties to occur? And Leo does a great job doing that. You know what I mean? Because he could have came at the situation with malice. He could have agreed to see her.
Well,
he could have threw her out when Sam fired her.
He was by the way, how ironic is it that the name of the episode is Take Out the Trash, and like basically the security's going to throw you out of the building in 15 minutes. She is the ultimate trash of the episode that's going to be thrown out, and then she's not. I think to answer your question, it's done the same way that Leo does it, right? His body length, he's seated, he's sitting back, so he's not an aggressive posture. His voice is even, it's measured. There's no hint of anger there. And he gives her as you pointed out quite correctly, he gives her options. He asks her questions. Instead of just coming to conclusions, he gives her the chance at every turn to continue on or not. So I think that's how it happens.
But who does that have to come from?
It has to start with the person who has the power.
So you agree with that?
I do, yeah.
And how do you determine in the situation who has the power?
Who
has the upper hand?
In this episode, it's really simple.
Right, but
in this
circumstance, if we're going to make it, you know, practical.
Usually, I think people have don't people just have like intrinsic dynamics? Like someone even if it's unspoken, this person has the power in the relationship and that person doesn't.
I mean,
are some relationships where it's more even, I will grant you.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if you...
There's three types of relationships that people have outlined. There's a dominance relationship, when one person has power over another person.
And I think that is what I'm referring to.
Okay, there's reciprocity relationship, or there's a communality relationship. So I think you nailed them on the head.
Right.
Those are the three types of relationships in human behavior.
Right.
So
I think for the most part, like certain people have... And dominance over another, and I think sometimes situation dictates it, right? So I think for
like job,
not only job, but what happens between the two people. So let's say someone has the power. Let's say like a Leo situation, mm-hmm. where it's a boss and an underling, but say that the boss did something wrong. Well, now the underling has the power, so the underling could be in the position to let the conversation, you know, occur. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's malleable. I don't think there's one answer.
So then, all right. So that's a nice example. It's clean. But what about in a communality relationship?
Where all is equal? I don't know. I think that's harder. I mean, I would think,
because that's pretty much the basis of all friendship, if it's not reciprocity. Mm. But like most friendships are based off of a communality.
I guess I'll agree with that. I don't know that I 100% agree with that. I think you are giving a lot of credit to a lot of people that,
right, but let's, I think, just a lot use of people, that clean, right, right, clinical
just
example.
In that example, I think it takes, I think in that circumstance, I think the most important thing is trust.
Okay.
I think that's the most important thing. Why do you look so confused?
Because I'm trying to, how does that make sense?
Okay. So
to what I asked.
Well, because the way that it, if because the trust has to, okay. So this is how it happens, right? You have two people on equal footing,
right?
And
let's say there's
a rift. There is a rift between them, right? And you have to figure out how to go about this conversation, but it's not so easy, because if, when you have the power, it's easy because you can give as much room for that other person, you know, to agree with you or not, because at the end of the day, you still have the power and you can just dismiss them.
Right, but or dismiss, we're not their talking opinion about that.
Right. So in this circumstance, because you don't have that power, you are so much more guarded. Mm-hmm. You're just inherently guarded.
Right.
So therefore, it's not going to be as easy for you to let down your guard, perhaps admit that you're wrong, perhaps give the other person the floor. So the only way I think you can do that is to trust the other person. If you don't trust that other person, it's not going to happen. If you're asking me literally how you do it, you literally like, okay, I think we need to talk about what happened the other day.
But is it a leap of faith? Because what if you don't trust the other person? Like, but you need to get the situation resolved. Like, is it a leap of faith and just putting yourself out there?
No. Because if you don't trust the person, then you don't trust the person. And if you do trust the person, then you do. You might be wrong to trust the person, in which case that's probably a leap of faith because you ended up like just going on a thing. If you don't trust the person and you have that type of dynamic, then I think it probably, it's going to be hard, but it probably comes down to just very businessy.
Mm.
Probably like, listen, okay, you and I have to work together, or you and, right, I have to coexist, or you and I have to blah, blah, blah. Obviously, there's something going on between us. We need to figure it out.
Right. Right.
That's the way, to me, I think if it's not a friendship where there's trust and it's more business, I think it has to be approached in a much more clinical, cold, calculated manner.
To me, that's, so now you're getting into the other description of it. We might be going down the rabbit hole with this one, but that's, to me, what you're explaining is the best scenario for reciprocity, because that's, to me, is just a business transaction like relationship.
And that might be.
So I'm still struggling with the communality stuff, because, and I'm doing this for selfish reasons.
But then if you don't trust somebody, I don't know how it's really that communal.
Right. Yeah, I'll give you that. But so then it's already there. So that's what I'm saying. How do you open up for discussion?
Well, you have to acknowledge that. I mean, it's good that it's there. If you don't acknowledge it, then it doesn't matter. We don't acknowledge a lot of things all the time. I think everything always starts with self-reflection and really getting inside. But you have to be able to be having a discussion and then realize, okay, you know what's happening right now? I'm letting all of my personal shit get in the way right now. So what I need to do is take a second and I need to say, all right, this person is a good person. I trust this person. They trust me, I hope. Let's just, hey, can we get through this? There's an issue on the table. We need to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it happens. I think you also probably stumble your way through it.
Right.
You know, yeah. I don't think it's as, you
it's
know,
not gonna be nice.
I don't think it's as clean as what happened with Leo and right. Karen. This isn't a TV show. But I think that's why, I think acknowledgement. I mean, I think all these things are, I think we're talking, I don't think this is going down the rabbit hole. I think we're just talking nuance, semantics, all that kind of stuff that I think is fleshes out a bigger thing.
Yeah. Because it just happens in everyday life all the time. So it's like,
yes,
you know,
but most of the time people avoid the resolution.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. Exactly why I'm trying to have this discussion.
Right. Yeah, but sometimes that's, but a lot of times too, it's also about desire. Sometimes people just don't want to resolve the thing.
Do you think some things are best left unresolved?
I'm sure there are. I'm sure that there is an example of it. I would imagine that the majority of things is a no, but I'm sure that there's like, I'm sure that there's got to be like one or two examples that would be.
Hmm.
Like one of those things where like the truth, like telling someone the truth is only going to help you. It's not going to help them type of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. All right.
I don't have a fact, you know, I don't have one on the top of my head, but I can't, I mean, right? There's got to be like at least one example in the history of the world where it was like, all right, it's better to leave that where
unresolved,
it is.
Yeah.
Right? There's got to be at least one.
Yeah.
I would, but that said, I mean, what do you think? I would say that the majority you would want to resolve.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I would engage in a resolution with the person if I knew I had the energy to do it.
Right.
Because I don't think that we should be engaging in or opening up a can of worms if we can't finish what we started.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if you're going to half-ass something, it's not worth engaging yourself
and
with.
I think it's different from person to person. Like, person to person in that circumstance. Like, I was just thinking about this thing today. You know, one of my closest friends, my best friend, you know, his ex-girlfriend, they broke up. I stayed with friends with her for a little while because I felt bad, you know, and this and that. But she wasn't really my friend. And, you know, years go by and years go by and years go by and she continues to get in touch with me. And it's like, all right, look, you know, I don't mean this to be mean, but it's like I only have so many hours in the day and I don't have enough time for the people that I want to see, let alone the people that I don't want to see. And again, it's nothing personal against her. It's just, you know, you're my best friend's ex. Like we were never really close. Like,
right.
Whatever. She never really got it. Like, she kept coming, like, after it, wanting to, you know, hang out and be friends and all this and
maybe
all
she was
these
into
other
you.
Things. No, she really wasn't. I honestly think that she was probably, like, either lonely, which I have a lot of empathy for, or trying to figure out a way to get back with him. But, like I said, I only have a certain number of hours in the day, and I don't get to spend it with the people that I do love.
Right.
So I'm sorry, but that's just, you know, I have no desire to ever revisit that. If she could have, like, she might wonder, like, how come we never, you know, hung out after, you know, whenever it was, you know, she might want to resolve that. I have no desire in ever revisiting that again. It will not help me. It might help her, and I might go to lengths to resolve it. Like if she were here right now, I might go through the lengths to try and resolve it for her. But I guess my point is that you don't always want to resolve an issue. And not only that, sometimes you are the only one in that circumstance that doesn't want to resolve it. And that's when it even gets even right. more complicated.
So situations like that, like for this, if I was in your shoes, I would say what I have to say and then kind of distance myself and let it naturally just fizzle out.
Right, which is kind of what I did.
Oh, all right.
You know, I was just like, you know, that's it, we're done, you know. But, you know, there are times that, you know, people want to, I think it's, what is it? It's one of my favorite movies, High Fidelity, where he goes back to, like, see the girlfriend, ex-girlfriend's past to see what went wrong and, like, not all of them are interested in resolving those issues,
right.
You know? And it's, I mean, that can happen. Sometimes you just don't want to resolve an issue. And sometimes you're the only one in that little thing that doesn't work. Like, I hold baggage from ex-girlfriends that I doubt they want to get into.
Right.
It
yeah.
might be healthy for me to do it, but I doubt they want to do it.
No, because I have two situations in my head that are very similar, but I don't know if it's worth talking about. The first one is like, I'm still very, very close with all of my ex's friends.
That is so, ex's friends? That's weird, too.
It's very weird.
That's very weird.
And
you look like you'd be that guy.
Well, thanks. But sure. I don't even know what that means. But I think that we've become friends far and outside of
the act. The
yeah,
yeah.
So it's a that weird happens. Dynamic.
That happens.
You know.
Yeah.
And we never talk about my ex, which is also a glaring issue in my head. Because the only reason why we're still friends is because of her.
Right.
So there's that.
Right.
And we kind of just avoid all talks of my ex.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I have a pretty functional relationship with my ex. So it's like I'm playing two sides of the card here.
Well, they probably, you know, I mean, your friends probably just think that it's taboo or a subject that you don't want to bring up because you don't want to bring up, well, let's leave well enough alone.
Right, maybe. But me and my ex have no problem talking about the friends. It's a weird, it's a weird situation to be in.
But I would understand why, like, they enjoy your company, clearly. You enjoy their company. They're probably like, if we talk about it, they also just might not be self-aware enough.
Maybe.
Maybe they just think, and maybe, like, their grouping of friends, that's just normal to them. That's also possible, too.
That's a very valid point.
You know?
Yeah.
It could be any number of reasons. You know, it's too hard to pinpoint.
And I also don't think that I could ever be 100% honest with them about if it ever brought up.
Yeah, I know, that's
one, to hurt their feelings. Two, for them to perceive me differently than what they currently perceive me. You know, just because of what happened with me and her is personal.
Well, but then you know what? You know what that tells you? That you are friends in a very specific sense. You are not friends that you can share everything with.
Yeah, well, them at least, you know, with this situation.
Yes.
Because, they're just things that shouldn't be brought up. That there's no need to bring up.
So then this is a circumstance. Then you just answered it yourself. This is a circumstance in which something doesn't need to be resolved.
Now, the other one in my head was my parents are divorced. And I still, to this day, I went on a walk the other day and I had this urge to just call my mother up and just hash out everything that she put me through.
Okay.
And then I chose against doing that.
Okay.
Because I think that I might have been ready for the resolution or to engage in that conversation.
But you don't think she was?
I don't think that she was. And I think that would have debilitated the relationship.
Right. Set you guys back.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. You see, this is one of those quagmire of a situation.
Well, to me, this is one of those things where
I know I'm in control of the relationship, so if anyone's going to open up the floor, it should be me.
Right, but what you've said is you're not sure how long, but you don't know how she's going to react, right? So it's one of those circumstances to me where if you have a feeling that she's not going to react well, then you're probably, I don't want to say that you're probably right, but you're probably onto something because you have a good sense of it. But if you wanted to test the waters and if you do have power, there's no reason why I don't think you can't say, unless it's like really deep, dark shit, there's no reason why I don't think you can't broach the topic to see if it's something that she'd be willing to engage in. Unless you are 100% sure she's not, and it will set your relationship back.
See, but now how much of me approaching the situation is just for my own benefit and to clear my own head and to set things right for myself?
Why is that? Why does every resolution have to be for everyone?
Yeah, I'll give you that. But we're talking about resolution for a functional relationship.
Right. Well, but your wouldn't it make it better for you?
For me, but who's to say that's not going to make it better for her? That's what I'm saying. So some things maybe are best left unresolved.
So you're talking about like there's a difference between myself and Myself, there are three things. Myself, the other person, and the relationship.
Right, because my solution to resolution, that rhymes. My solution for resolution might be a different...
Might come at the cost of
right.
the relationship.
It might not right. fit the other person's solution for resolution.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, so maybe there are things left unresolved, but
maybe. I mean, at that point, we're talking about cost analysis and what benefits and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
but you see what yeah. the but you know what this is what this is what. And not to, I mean, yes, to bring it back to the episode. I was going to say not to bring it back to the episode, but to bring it back to the episode. I mean, you know, you're watching this scene with Leo and this girl, and this is everything. This is everything. I mean, this is wisdom to me personified. I mean, you're talking about like engaging and really getting in there. I mean, she, you know, she says that line that I quoted before, you know, you're not like what I thought you'd be like. And it's just very clear to her that she operated without all of the facts, but she didn't operate without malice. She just assumed a certain thing. And partially, I think that's because she's very young. And the other thing, there's, I think, a few reasons. She's very young. She has a history with an alcoholic. And, you know, she just assumed, you know, that she knew what an alcoholic was like. But she's there and she's willing and she sits and she listens to him and he's clearly not what she thought that he was. And she was willing to learn.
Yeah.
And again, Leo, I can't say enough about Leo. I mean, this is maybe the greatest moment of the series so far. I mean, if we're just talking moments, I know that there are episodes that I love more. I mean, In Excelsis Deo and we've talked about, I think it was The State Dinner. I mean, if there's one scene and one just you know, how we talk about this show, about our podcast, about how we watch the episodes and we try to extrapolate the bigger life things from them. There is, to me, nothing bigger than this.
Mm.
Nothing. To be able to go outside of yourself and look at someone else's situation and empathize and understand... There is nothing, there is no higher form of wisdom as far as I'm concerned. Zero.
Hmm.
I don't think there's anything greater than that. You know, I was thinking about something the other day and I couldn't remember. I think we've talked about it. You know, when you have X person commit a crime against Y person, and I think we've talked about this before, everyone always feels empathy for Y person, as well you should. But I guess for some reason, and I think it's a flaw in humanity, if you feel empathy for X person, the one that committed the crime, it somehow perceptually negates how you feel about Y person. And I don't know why that is.
Hmm.
I don't know what that is about us.
Right, they're not mutually exclusive. They're not. But we treat them that way.
You can feel bad for both parts.
Yeah.
You can... still punish the criminal and yet still feel empathy
absolutely. Towards
them. I don't know why we, and I don't want to make it like I don't feel this way and other people do. I think it's a flaw in humanity. I don't know why that is.
I think it's because it's easy to categorize people to certain things and put them on a shelf in our head. If we categorize somebody or label somebody as a criminal.
Yeah.
You know, then we can then move on with our lives.
Then I don't have to feel bad. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's less messy. It's not...
It's less cognitive demand.
It's just, you know, and this episode is really... It's really easy to just throw this fucking chick out on the sidewalk. Really easy to do that, you know?
I kind of like how Sam did that.
Because this... I know you did. But this isn't going to be easy for her. She has to go work with these people again.
And I'm sure... I bet you she might actually... I wonder, I mean, if we'll probably never see her again, right?
No, we don't.
All right, but she'll probably look for another job. Because I don't think that just knowing who she...
It'd be funny if it were like three episodes later. Yeah, that bitch is working for the RNC. That'd be amazing. She's working with Claypool. Now she's got files on all of us.
Yeah. No, I think it would be so hard for her to just resume... Her normal day-to-day.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, and this is actually going to come up later on. They hire a Republican. I think in season 2 or season 3.
Was that Mandy's doing?
no, that is not Mandy's doing. But they hire a Republican, and it's difficult. And how does someone like that work in this place? I mean, that's not completely analogous, but you know, look, that scene is worth the fucking price of admission for me. Everything else about this episode bothers me, except for the fact that the president loves the winter, and I do too. We're in the middle of a heat wave, guys.
We are.
It's like 95 every fucking day. I can't deal with it anymore. What else you got?
I don't know. What else you got?
I don't know. Politics versus reality, but we kind of touched on it already.
Yeah. You know what I do like? What? I just thought of this.
Okay.
So the whole Danny Concannon CJ relationship.
Snooze town.
Yeah, it's boring. But you know what? They really show how good of actors they are, I think.
Phenomenal.
When they do those tension built
everything
scenes.
They do. That's the only thing. That's what's amazing to me.
I love the way that they act.
I love every interaction except when it's based on will they, won't they. Maybe I'm just tired of will they, won't theys. I don't know. It's just boring to me.
Hmm.
But I think, yeah, that scene when she's like, you know, I'm not, you know, are we off the record? And he's like, yeah, we're off the record. And it's like, it doesn't feel like we are. It's like, I don't flick a switch or anything. And then she drops that, you know, that line. Can a father feel, you know, still be embarrassed about his son?
Mm-hmm.
Even though, and Danny is just kind of like, I don't know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yes. It's such a fucking great moment. And the rest of that, every scene, you're right. Every scene of theirs, phenomenal. Yeah. They're really good actors. It's the reason why I think Potato Face got hired to do Studio 60, which is the show after this. Because he's really good with Sorkin. He's a very good actor. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
I just don't like him for CJ. I'm very protective of my CJ.
I like CJ and Potato Face.
That's what we would say his code name would be, right?
Oh, totally.
Old Potato Face.
Yeah. All right, that's all I got, Joe.
All right, I think that's all I have. I mean, we have all those things with the trash and lumping out the trash. It's the advanced man, Zoe's teacher, PBS. The sex thing, the Lydells, you know, politics versus reality. Yeah, whatever. We've talked about politics versus reality before. Bleh. The very last thing I'm going to bring up, two last things. One of them is going to be very quick. It's said in this episode, this is the other thing that I really love about, you know, if wisdom and being able, if the greatest measure of wisdom is being able to extricate yourself from a situation, understand the other person's point of view, this is very closely behind it as the pinnacle of wisdom and all this other stuff. The measure of a man part, the measure of a man. We've talked about that, but it was actually said in this episode.
Oh, that's a good thing to talk
about.
And
it's very, very important.
Hmm.
Haven't we talked about that before?
Not in the context that came up in this episode.
Well, the context in this episode, I mean, Simon Bly, the only thing that I was thinking throughout this whole thing is, how the fuck is that his friend?
Right.
How have they ever been friends for that long?
We all have friends like that.
We do, but to say that he's one of your best friends that you need counsel on in this moment, what a douche.
Yeah.
Douche. I mean, come on. That's all I was thinking. That and he looked weird without a beard. Because I know him with a beard from Gilmore Girls.
Have you ever had a friend like that?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure I have. Probably not someone that I'd call a friend.
Have you ever had, or let's put it this way. Have you ever had a friend who was only there during the good times?
Probably not. No, I'm probably going to go ahead and say no.
Hmm.
Mostly because I don't have very many friends.
Right.
I actively, you know that about me. Yeah. I don't like to surround myself with people generally. That's why I don't understand racists. Like, you would think that a racist surrounds himself mostly with white people. Like if he's a white supremacist, right? Like most people suck. So I'm thinking, like, if the white supremacist surrounds himself with other white people, he's got to be turned off of being racist, like, almost, like, within a week, because Cletus and all the other guys fucking are just awful and annoying. That's what I'm saying.
So, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
I think I just figured it out. I just solved racism. Surround white supremacists with white people and only white people. In a week's time, he'll be like, all these fucking white people suck. I just nailed it. Segregation as a way to integrate. I nailed it. I'm doing the reverse.
That's how you might be onto something.
I might be onto something. That's right. All right. So sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
No. Have you had someone like that?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Totally. Why do you keep them around?
Because I have different types of friends. And I know that some of my greatest friends I can't rely on when I'm going through a bad situation. Like, I need to go to different people for different things.
Right.
You know? And just because they can't be there for me or they don't know how to be there for me doesn't
mean that
they're bad
friends. Interesting.
So you don't
judge them based on that?
No.
Interesting.
You know?
But then I would ask, why is Leo going to someone like that in this circumstance?
He's habit.
Clearly not a...
Habit.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a... So then you don't necessarily agree with the measure of a man...
Leo's a masochist.
But so then you don't necessarily agree with the president saying that the measure of a man is not when things are going well, it's when things are not going well.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Oh, so then...
I think there's another quote that says, you can tell what a person's like. A man's like a tea bag. Once you put them in hot water, they'll show their true colors.
That's funny. Okay. See, I don't know that I agree with that. You know what? Now that I think about it, I'm not sure that I would say it exactly the same way that the president said it, that the measure of a man is not when things are going well, but when things are going bad. I think we brought this up one other time. That thing that David Price, the pitcher, mm-hmm. he quoted, it was like hashtag that's not me.
Yeah.
I don't think that's who you are. It's that's who you are in that circumstance. So if you're a dick, when I'm completely reversing within the scope of this discussion, I think I'm reversing everything that I think about this.
90 seconds.
90 seconds what?
Took you to reverse your opinion.
Wow, 90 seconds. Really?
Nah, you're a flip-flopper.
Well, now that I'm capable of changing my mind. But now that I think about it, it's not that the measure of a man is... I can't believe I'm doing this. But yeah, it's not that the measure of a man is when things are going bad. And it's not that the true colors is when he's in hot water. It's that's just who he is in that circumstance. Meaning... you can be nice and benevolent and all that other stuff when the circumstance dictates it, and maybe you are not when the circumstance doesn't dictate it. I don't know that either one of those versions of you is any more or any less true of who you are. I just think that, let's just put it this way. If the teabag is never put in hot water, are you saying then that I'm never going to see the true colors of the teabag? Dude, that's a fucking philosophy question right there. Just blew your fucking mind.
You did. I'm impressed.
I want to hear what other people have to say about that. Seriously, let us. I want to know what you think. If you think that you never come up to adversity, and thusly you are never put in that circumstance, are you any less a version of yourself because you've never faced that? I don't know. I really don't know. I would tend to think that there is no singular version of a human being. We are capable of being anything in any moment. The way I'm thinking about it now, I almost feel as if it's easier to just say, I'm a this person. And thus, when I'm in a circumstance in which I'm not that person, oh, that wasn't me. As opposed to acknowledging the fact that you can be different given fucking what time of day it is, let alone the circumstance.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's what I'm going with. I'm totally reversed my entire field. Measure of a man, the whole thing.
Wow.
I think that you should always strive to be better. Don't get me wrong. I think you should always strive to be better. But
there's another quote.
Oh my God.
You don't have to be sick to want to get better.
Okay. Yeah. That's actually, that is pertinent. Fuck you. All right. That's true, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Holy shit. If we didn't discuss this, I never would have reversed my field. I got to think about this now. I'm going to take like a month to be – I'm going to be thinking about
this.
Should,
we should write something, like a nice thing, like a real thing. Like a, we should write something and then like post it for people to read.
What do you mean?
I'm talking like a 2-3 page thing.
On what?
On our view of the Measure of a Man quote.
Do you guys want that? What's next podcast at gmail.com. The what's next podcast at gmail.com. Or hit us up on Facebook, the What's Next Podcast. Yeah, I got to work through it. I got to think about it. I really don't know. It's amazing that I think I just reversed my entire field on how I feel about
it. And
that.
I think the added extra layer to this whole thing is you need the circumstance. Like you said, like yes. If you don't have the hot water.
Yes. No, but that's absolutely true. Yes.
Because people can go through their whole lives and we'll never know what they're all about.
And I guess it's to say, you know, Simon Bly, this guy in this episode, he is a fucking dick in this particular scene. But I guarantee you that's not all he is. You know, the same way that someone may come away and say, man, Anthony was a dick, or man, Joe was a dick. That's probably not the entire book on us. The same way that if someone said, Anthony is the nicest guy on the planet, or Joe is the nicest guy on the planet. That's probably not the same. And the difference between the dick and the nicest guy on the planet probably isn't that great. Probably isn't.
I wonder if there's a way to objectively measure like the net dickiness of someone or like the net niceness of someone.
I don't know if there's an objective way. I doubt it.
I mean, it might be some way to – it might be with flirting with these elements of the measure of a man.
You probably can set up an experiment in which – certain choices, options are brought to you and, you know, you are given them in the various situations and seeing what people choose. Like, you know, it's like there was like if you are offered fruit salad or a slice of chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake all the way.
Right, but maybe if you had just come from the gym, you would have choose the fruit
chocolate
salad.
Chocolate cake all the way.
Well, right, but I think that you would probably... There was actually a study done when you were trying to remember two numbers, people chose the fruit overwhelmingly. And when people were trying to remember eight numbers, they chose the cake overwhelmingly.
Right.
But so I'm saying, like, circumstance can alter... So that's probably how you would have to do this dickiness experiment. You know, like...
I wonder, too. Now I'm thinking of like other situations, like Darth Vader, right? Okay. In Return of the Jedi, when he throws the Emperor and kills him.
Right.
Right?
If up it were until, a Tuesday instead of a Wednesday, would he have not done it?
Right.
Maybe.
Or, you know, like, up until that point, we thought Darth Vader was this big, bad dude.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But... I don't know.
He killed a lot of people, right? You see in the prequels exactly. How he killed a lot of people. So who's the real Darth Vader? How come they all can't be? Why can't they all be?
Right. And I guess, but now I'm going back on what you said. The measure of a man is not when things are going well, but when things are bad.
Right.
Because things were going well. He was killing people. Right? Things were
right,
good.
But things were still going well. He was still in charge. He could have easily let the Emperor kill his son.
Right, but maybe it's an internal thing. Like, when things aren't going well inside, maybe that's where the measure of a man is built. All right, let's not get into this.
I still don't see how that changes. That's still just as really you as when there's no turmoil on the inside. I have to sit with this. Mm-hmm. I can't discuss this right now because I haven't thought about it enough. That's what I do, ladies and gentlemen. A subject comes up, I sit with it for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months, and then I make a decision. Because now, dude, seriously, that was one of my biggest things, and that just the world has just changed.
Do you need a hug?
No,
I could hug.
Maybe
you.
I do, because I would just instinctively say no, but maybe I do.
I got one for you, buddy.
I don't think so.
You just let me know.
I don't think instead of it's a definitely not. All right, so that's it. I can't. Are we done?
We're done.
All right. I was going to talk about how in the 90s, sex and violence on TV was like a big thing. Just, if you're watching this episode again, keep that in context with the whole PBS thing. I think that that's hysterical. The 90s was so all about that. All right, that's it. Wow. Look, I'm sorry. I'm blown away. I think you're going to have to... You open this episode, I think you're going to have to wrap it up. My head's in another place.
All right, guys. Well, that concludes episode 13. Throwing out the trash.
That's not what
the episode
is.
This is... Anthony Caputo saying, see you soon.
Joseph Amato, bye-bye.